Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today we are so excited to be joined by a friend of the show, general friend, Joey. Welcome, Joey.
Hi. Aw. Yeah. I'm honored about my friend status.
Yeah.
I love it.
You're definitely friend status.
Thank you.
We need to meet in IRL.
We do. Yes. I need to go to Atlanta soon. I'm waiting till it starts getting cold here, so I don't want to be in New York, and then I will definitely be out in Atlanta once that happens.
Yeah. That's smart, because it's very hot here currently. But yes, I cannot wait. And it's been a minute since you've been on here, so we're really excited to have you back. And this topic is one that I'm really interested to learn more about. And I think you and I were discussing before this, I sort of learned about it at the same time as you did, but perhaps slightly differently.
Yeah.
But yes, today we're talking about COSA. So can you just like intro what we're discussing today?
For sure. Yeah. So like you said, I'm going to be talking about COSA, which is the Kids Online Safety Act, and sort of this onslaught of bills in Congress right now that are aimed at, quote, protecting kids online. We live in a weird time, and there's a lot of weird, terrible, repressive legislation going on. This set of bills that we're going to focus on, and I think I was already sort of concerned about this when I started writing this, I think especially after researching this whole thing, this piece of legislation is one of, if not the thing that I'm probably most worried about right now. I think it has a lot of potential really catastrophic outcomes that could happen from this. And it's been a little bit scary to see sort of how it's been repackaged a lot in mainstream coverage and how a lot of sort of the issues of it, regarding it have been kind of glossed over in favor of this idea of like, quote, protecting kids. And yeah, I'm going to get more into that. But so really quick, just a content warning. I'm going to be discussing some mental health crises, suicide, self-harm, bullying, child abuse. None of it's super explicit, but these are things that are going to come up. And also just transphobia and homophobia and some of the legislation that has been weaponizing these phobias. Anyways, as Annie and I were speaking about before this, I first heard about this through TikTok, like many people, I think, because again, this is a piece of legislation that's in Congress right now and is happening tangentially to a lot of other similar pieces of legislation. But TikTok has been a big place, a big platform for activists to speak about this. Two creators in particular I want to shout out are Sarah Phillips. I think her ad is just Sarah E. Phillips. And then also the creator Omar's big sister. I don't know what her actual name is, but I love her TikTok. She's hilarious. Very super online internet kind of stuff. Love it. But anyways, she's done a lot of really great work in talking about this issue and getting information out there.
Yeah. And I think Samantha as usual, kind of my TikTok person who sends me TikToks that I need, sent me some about this. The day, the tragic day that AO3 went down and fan fiction was unavailable.
Yeah, so, that was also a big thing, that kind of sparked a lot of this. Obviously, like, people were talking about this beforehand. There was a lot of organizing that was happening. But about a month ago, AO3, which is this big fan fiction site, we've talked about on this show a couple times, it shut down for like a day. It turned out there was some whole, I still don't totally know what the story is. There were like a lot of weird things that was happening. I think I saw it was hacked or something. But something that was coming up that day was like, hey, this sucked that we didn't have fan fiction for a day. This could be a permanent thing if this legislation passes. Like, we should talk about this because I'm somebody who enjoys fan fiction. I think it is, you know, an important part of the internet and all of that. But there's a lot of other, even if you don't care about fan fiction, there's a lot of things this legislation's going to affect that are a little bit scary. So yeah, so COSA, the Kids Online Safety Act, what is it? COSA is one of, again, an onslaught of recent bills aimed at regulating kids' online activity and data privacy, which in theory seems not terrible. There's two things here. One is data privacy, which we don't really have a lot of in this country. And I do think that is a very important issue. But if you look at the actual bill, it doesn't really do much to protect data privacy. In fact, it kind of does the opposite and it forces people to put a lot more information online. Tech experts have said that this bill will end up requiring everyone to upload their government ID when they want to use the internet. Which, like, just think about that for a second. Again, going back to Omar's big sister, one of my favorite TikTokers who's done some great work on this. She made a couple of videos about this, one talking about this particular concept, and she pointed out two really important things. One, if this happens, again, your government ID will be attached to everything that you do online. So if you're speaking out against the government, if you are a part of a marginalized group, this can be used to target you. Like, this will now be attached to your official sort of ID that usually has like your birthday, usually your address. People already get doxxed for activism they're doing or just identities that they have, and this will make it so much easier. And then the second point that you made was like, this is a site you need to upload your ID to, and then that site could be hacked very easily. And then all of a sudden, all of your information could be leaked online. Like, again, this whole thing is about we're protecting kids' data, we're protecting data privacy. Yes, I did just say data and data. They're the same word. but yeah, it does the opposite. It ends up doing the opposite for everybody. It makes it less safe for people to be online. But so the main focus of this episode is going to be on that first part, which is this idea of regulating kids' online activity. Which, again, just saying it like that, that sounds great. The internet's crazy. If you're a parent and you have a young kid, like, I can't imagine what that's like. You're totally going to want to have like some guardrails in place. You're going to want to have things that you don't want your kids to see. But the problem is this piece of legislation is very vague. It's coming up at a very strange time. And there's a very clear disconnect between how it's sort of being marketed and the actual motivation behind it and the reality of what it's going to be used for. So Fight for the Future is an advocacy group that focuses on tech policy issues, particularly data privacy. They created a website that's called stopcosa.com. We'll have it in the show notes. But on that website, they state, COSA claims to make kids safer, but it's really a dangerous censorship bill that would give the government unprecedented control over the internet. This would put youth in danger by preventing them from accessing potentially life-saving resources. Lawmakers concerned about online safety should reject COSA and instead work to protect all internet users from abusive tech companies by passing a federal data privacy law. And like, first things first, up top, I'm going to be talking a lot about the problems with this specific legislation and also talking about some of the positives of social media and the internet. That doesn't mean that the internet isn't also deeply messed up and there aren't a lot of concerns about, again, data privacy and what kids are seeing online and what people have access to. I think there is a conversation that needs to be had there. This bill is not the solution. This bill that is just going to be used as a method of censorship is not the solution. Again, I'm not really a tech person. I don't know the specifics of how a lot of stuff works, but we do need data privacy laws in this country. Like, that is something we need. I think it is really telling that these politicians are focusing on a lot of these bills that are focused on censorship rather than actually protecting data. And then also at the top, clearly there is like a problem. Again, like, there are a lot of problems with the internet. There are a lot of problems with how kids interact with the internet and how we interact with the internet.
and how technology is regulated. But again, rather than addressing data privacy or mental health, which is going to come up a lot in this bill, that's not what they're doing. So again, for Byte for the Future, they said, first, COSA would pressure platforms to install filters that would wipe the net of anything deemed, quote, inappropriate for minors. This equals instructing platforms to censor, plain and simple. Places that already use content filters have restricted important information about suicide prevention and LGBTQ plus support groups. And COSA would spread this kind of censorship to every corner of the internet. It's no surprise that anti-rights zealots are excited about COSA. It would let them shut down websites that cover topics like race, gender, and sexuality. Second, COSA would ramp up the online surveillance of all internet users by expanding the use of age verification and parental monitoring tools. Not only are these tools needlessly invasive, they are a massive safety risk for young people who could be trying to escape domestic violence and abuse. And then also, when we talk about this bill, they use, you know, language like kids and children a lot. That's just referring to anybody 17 and younger, which again is like the definition of a child. But I think that there's something very intentional about using the word kids. And like when you hear kids, you're thinking of like an 8-year-old, you're not thinking of a 17-year-old. But I think like, especially as we talk about how this bill is going to affect information about like sexual and reproductive health, which are very important things for people to learn, usually in their teen years. Like, again, we're talking about teenagers not having access to this information. We're not talking about like, I don't know, 5-year-olds. And yeah, again, this isn't a coincidence that all this is happening at the same time. There's this huge backlash against queer and trans people, particularly queer and trans kids in this country. And so let's talk about who's actually behind the bill. There's two main sponsors. One is Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who's a Republican. And then the other is Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, who's a Democrat. We love bipartisan repression. All right.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
So anyways, I'm going to start with Senator Blackburn and the right-wing push for this bill. I'm going to get to Senator Blumenthal for a minute because I some weird stuff on him. But anyways, also, ageism is bad. We've talked about this on the show. Ageism is a terrible thing. That being said, I think it is worth pointing out both Blackburn and Blumenthal are in their 70s. And like, I know it's complicated. Legislation's complicated. A lot of people work on legislation. But, like, personally, there's something really weird to me about the fact that the two sponsors of this bill are in their 70s. And most of the people that are like promoting this are on the older side. And then meanwhile, if you look at a lot of the backlash and a lot of the people that are speaking out against it, it's a lot of like 20 something or 30 something year olds or teenagers, you know. And we're the people that actually grew up on the internet. Like I'm 24. Like the internet has been a part of my life since I was a kid. There is a generation alive right now that actually has experienced this. And I think deliberately not looking to those people to kind of lead this discussion is weird and is just not going to like end well. There is a quote like Gen Z activist group that has been supporting this bill. It's called Design It For Us. Their Instagram bio says, a coalition of young activists and organizations fighting for safer social media and online platforms for kids, teens, and young adults. I haven't really been able to find much information on this organization. Honestly, the most telling thing for me, they have 326 Instagram followers, which is fine. Instagram's not for everybody. But if you're calling yourself like a Gen Z activist organization, you have 326 Instagram followers, like that's... My mom has more Instagram followers. Like, I don't, which again, she's going to listen to this and get mad at me. That does not change her. It's just like, it's a generation.
How you going to call your mama like that?
Yeah, no, she's going to get a very angry text after she listens to this episode. You know what? Whatever. I needed a point of reference. Anyways, so yeah, there's a sort of disconnect between that.
I say this and I'm probably the same age as your mama and around the same around following. So how dare you? I'll get mad for her.
You know what? If she can make fun of me about having to text her about like how to send a letter, she can whatever.
OMG, your poor mother. And we're so sorry, Joy's
so
mother.
Sorry,
we're not party to this.
I'm with you. I'm on your side.
Anyways, back to Senator Blackford. So a May article from the Electronic Freedom Foundation written by Jason Kelly stated that COSA's co-author, Senator Blackburn of Tennessee, has referred to education about race and race discrimination as, quote, dangerous for kids. Many states have agreed and recently moved to limit public education of the history of race, gender, and sexuality discrimination. If COSA passes, platforms are likely to preemptively block conversations that discuss these topics, as well as discussions about substance abuse, suicide, and eating disorders. And there is not clear agreement on their causes or their solutions, referring to suicide, eating disorders, and substance abuse. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. First things first, we're living in the middle of an active push to criminalize the existence of a minority group in the U.S. The right wing of this country are actively trying to kill trans people. I have no problem just saying that. Y'all straight up had a spokesperson at CPAC say, like, trans people need to be eliminated. It's very mask off at this point. Senator Blackburn clearly in sort of that same boat. And cis queer people, you are also being targeted. You are also now part of this group. Like, you guys are next. We know where this is going. Anyways, so these same people that are fueling this panic about queer and trans people, they're now saying they want authority to dictate what is and what is not appropriate for kids online. This, I think, is particularly relevant right now. There's a wide piece of misinformation that's circulating right now that's called the social contagion theory that basically claims that exposure to trans people or media that talks about trans people will somehow convince otherwise cisgender kids that they're trans too. It's based on this really weird claim that there's just like so many kids coming out as transgender right now. I don't really get where that's coming from. Yeah, this idea that like coming out as trans is like a cool, trendy thing to do with everybody. Again, I don't know why people think that. That is very much not the case. Coming out is still very, very difficult. Anyways, a lot of TERFs in particular have latched onto this idea. I would totally recommend checking out the Anti-Trans Hate Machine podcast with Amara Jones. She did a really great deep dive into how this theory circulated and a lot of like the right-wing push behind it. One thing I also think is really scary about this is that, you know, more than like the sort of hyper-religious conservative angle of transphobia, I think this can be very appealing to a lot of people that like consider themselves to be like center-left or left. This has made its way into a lot of mainstream coverage of trans people. It's made its way into the New York Times coverage. I think, like, this is scarier to me than, like, the sort of evangelical, super ultra-right Christian angle that is also super terrifying, but yeah. And again, there's no evidence for this. This entire, like, theory, quote-unquote, comes from one study, from one doctor.
The organization that published it later refuted it, and a number of medical organizations have come out and said that there's no evidence this is actually a thing. Also, again, like, I don't get why this is so hard for cis straight people to understand. But, like, think about it. Okay, you could be arrested for not dressing up close enough to your gender, regardless if you were trans or not, like, not dressing feminine or masculine enough up until, like, the 70s. And then, like, the AIDS crisis happened and a lot of people died. And then the next 20 years, it wasn't, like, there was still a lot of homophobia. There was still a lot of transphobia that was very well accepted. Maybe the reason more people are coming out as trans now is just that, like, we live in a slightly more accepting society. And yes, we are quickly rolling backwards too, but, like, we do live in a time where there's unprecedented visibility, and that can be really helpful, especially, and again, like, if you're a trans kid and you've never been exposed to this idea that, like, you can be trans, that's a possibility. And then suddenly, like, you see a piece of media where they talk about trans people, whether that's, like, through the internet or TV or just, like, a book you read, like, that can help you realize you're trans. That's one of the beautiful things I think about a lot of media and a lot of entertainment media and fiction too, is, like, people see themselves reflected in it. So, like, yeah, if you have a kid and they watched a show about trans people and then all of a sudden they were like, I think I'm trans, that probably means they're trans. That probably just means they saw themselves for the first time. And then also this whole idea of, like, oh, your friend came out as trans, so now you're going to come out as trans. Like, we all kind of find each other. Like, we all kind of, you know, it's like having any sort of marginalized identity. You're going to want to find people with similar experiences to you. It makes sense that trans kids are going to sort of latch onto each other, like, form friendships. And again, like, I think when we're talking about the internet, we're talking about this issue particularly involving the internet. So for some people, the internet is that space where they find these connections. They find connections with other trans kids. They find connections with other trans people. That was my experience growing up. I was, you know, growing up when Tumblr was a big thing, and, like, Tumblr was sort of my first exposure to, like, other queer people and, like, queer community. And there's positives and negatives of that. But again, I think I'm glad that I had that instead of just not having anything. And again, there is a discussion to be had about, like, online safety and all of that. But just saying we need to censor all this, we need to let kids, like, not have any access to this, that is not the answer. That is going to end up causing more harm than good. And again, like, when it is terrifying, this whole idea that, like, the whole social contagion idea, it is rooted in this idea that being trans is wrong. It is rooted in this idea that, like, there's something wrong with you if you're trans or queer. Because in all honesty, too, it's like, worst case scenario, yeah, maybe it is a phase. Maybe your kid comes out as trans and then later they decide they're not. That's normal. Kids go through phases. Like, I don't know. It's very strange that there's been this, like, massive backlash to the idea of even considering that you might be trans or you might not be your assigned gender at birth. So the Heritage Foundation has also been a big supporter of this bill. Surprise, surprise. And on May 20th, they tweeted, quote, keeping trans content away from children is protecting kids, in response to somebody pointing out, you know, another quote where they were talking about, like, yes, we want this bill to pass because we can stop trans and queer people from existing on the internet. And yeah, again, very mask off. Like, it's very obvious what they're going to be using this legislation for. Another big supporter of this bill is the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, which a Vice article by Janice Rose described as a far-right, quote, anti-trafficking group, previously known as Morality and Media, that has lobbied against porn, sex workers, and LGBT rights since the 1960s. Again, I'm not saying there isn't a lot of problems with, like, the porn industry, but it feels very strange to me that they're like, we're an anti-trafficking group, and then their main things they're lobbying against are porn and LGBT rights and sex workers? anyways, just seems weird. Back to that Vice article, quote, the group's president, Patrick Truman, has previously worked for the American Family Association and the Family Research Council, both far-right Christian organizations that have been designated as anti-LGBTQ hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So yeah, this is legislation that's being supported by hate groups. I think that is worth pointing out. And yeah, one of the really messed up things about all of this and about a lot of this legislation is a lot of times it's framed as protecting kids, as stopping child abuse, stopping trafficking, which all seem great, but that can very easily be used as sort of a mask for anti-LGBT, anti people just talking about sexuality in general, people talking about reproductive health care.
especially in like a post-QAnon America. I would always be cautious if a piece of legislation is talking about protecting kids or anti-trafficking. There's a very good chance that's sort of a front for something else. And the frustrating part about that is like, yeah, trafficking is an issue. Kids being abused is an issue. We should be addressing those ideas, but this isn't actually addressing that. This is addressing very different issues. And yeah, again, I'm focusing a lot on LGBTQ plus issues and how these are going to be affected by this bill, because I think that's the most obvious right now and probably like the first thing that it will be used for. But again, going back to that quote about Senator Blackburn, a lot of these politicians and advocates are like the same people that are also saying that learning about racism is inappropriate for children, or learning anything about sexual and reproductive health. There was that article that just came out that was like, you basically can't teach AP Psych in Florida anymore because of like the Don't Say Gay bill. Like that, it's crazy. This isn't, there's so many things that could be kind of caught in the net of what this bill allows politicians to regulate. And then so going back to that quote again from the Electronic Freedom Foundation about the bill and its sponsors, it also points out that the bill passed, if the bill passes, quote, platforms are likely to preemptively block discussions about substance abuse, suicide, and eating disorders, which I think is the other side of this discussion about mental health. And again, I'm not saying social media can't be used to promote those things. Like I said, I was a Tumblr kid. I have seen all of the worst of this, but they are very complicated issues. There's a lot of things that cause this. There is people talk about like the mental health crisis happening right now. There's a lot of factors that contribute to that. And also the internet and social media can also be tools for helping find support. Again, the internet's just a platform. It's not necessarily good or bad. It is just a way of distributing information, and you can just as easily find things that will help you as you can find things that will harm you. So from that same article, again, they said, quote, to pick just one example, in some communities, safe injection sites are seen as part of a solution to substance abuse. In others, they are seen as part of the problem. Under COSA, could a platform be sued for displaying content about them or about needle exchanges, naloxone, or other harm reduction techniques? So yeah, again, the problem with this is that, yes, it'll block information. It'll block things that'll supposedly promote eating disorders or substance abuse, but then it'll also block information about getting help.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
And on that mental health thread, because again, so this has been something I think supporters of the bill have really latched onto. And I, again, we were talking about kind of the right wing
backlash. I think this has been a little bit more universal, a little bit more bipartisan. They're arguing that the internet and the kids, the things that kids are seeing on the internet are the sole causes of all of these things like depression, eating disorders, addiction, self-harm, et cetera. Again, which are all very complicated issues. These things didn't just randomly appear when the internet appears. They've been around for a while. I think they're more visible now for a lot of reasons, but they've always kind of been there. And again, there was definitely a conversation to be had about the mental health crisis happening in this country. But just blaming the internet for it is dangerously simplifying the situation. And it's just a weird, like, disinformed take. It's going to end up causing it more harm than good. And so a lot of this is coming from, there recently was this report from the U.S. Surgeon General, which was an advisory on social media and youth mental health, that called to attention the negative impacts that social media can have on kids' mental health. And this is a great report. I totally encourage people to check it out. I think it does a good job of, like, again, laying out a lot of these issues and laying out how social media can make these problems worse, which, again, I'm not denying that that is a thing. I'm not denying the fact that social media can contribute to these problems. But one thing I think was interesting about the study and that is sort of being looked over by a lot of coverage of it is that it also does a pretty good breakdown of, like, not just the negative aspects of social media, but also the positive aspects. And one thing that came out of the study was that marginalized youth tend to see the internet more positively and tend to have kind of more positive experiences with the internet. So again, if you just Google this study, you're going to see a lot of headlines that are like, Surgeon General raises alarm on about social media and social media driving teen mental health crisis, which is a big part of the report. But it also said social media can provide, quote, positive community and connection with others who share identity, abilities, and interests. They later said that social media can provide, quote, buffering effects against stress, particularly for queer and trans youth, youth of color, or just like anybody that belongs to a marginalized group. Some stats from the report that I thought were particularly interesting. One was that 7 out of 10 adolescent girls of color report encountering positive or identity-affirming content related to race across social media platforms. 58% of adolescents interviewed reported that social media helped them feel more accepted. 67% said that social media helps them feel like they have people who can support them through tough times. 71% said that social media provides them a place to show their creative side. And 80% felt like they were more connected to what's going on in their friends' lives. That last stat, I think, is particularly important. The study also pointed out that, quote, the ability to form and maintain friendships online and develop social connections, as well as interactions with more diverse peer groups than are available offline. Like, these are all sort of benefits of social media, which, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was this pandemic thing that just happened. And a lot of us were very isolated for a long period of time. A lot of kids were. And the internet and social media, that was a way for people to find connection. That was a way for people to stay connected with other people. It provided an escape for a lot of people. It definitely helped me. Like, that's how I kind of stayed sane. I was, you know, I was on Twitter a lot. I was on TikTok a lot. I was also, like, just FaceTiming friends and stuff like that. Like, that was a way for me to, like, keep up social interaction, which is a thing that, you know, people need. Anyways, so one more point I want to pull from this report. It said, quote, in addition, research suggests that social media-based and other digitally-based mental health interventions may also be helpful for some children and adolescents by promoting help-seeking behaviors and serving as a gateway to initiating mental health care. So that's kind of going back to what I was saying before. Like, this is really important. You can argue that, yes, like, social media, the internet, it exposes kids to self-harm and to addiction and to suicidal idealization, but also it provides kids with support. If you Google anything related to suicide, like, one of the main things that pops up is the suicide hotline. Like, that is a resource that is available to people. There are resources through the internet, people that are trying to overcome addiction. You can find communities online. And also, if you've been following this, like, ongoing right-wing attack on queer and trans folks in this country, one of their most recent targets has been the Trevor Project, which is a suicide hotline for LGBTQ plus kids. A suicide hotline. So it is something that saves kids' lives. And this has been kind of the latest group that's been roped into this whole, like, groomer rhetoric about LGBTQ plus organizations and people. This is a suicide hotline. This is preventing death. And it's just, it's so, what the f- I just, I can't, like, it's so twisted. It is so messed up.
And I think it is really telling that the same people that are trying to shut down the Trevor Project just because they acknowledge that queer people exist, I don't know, they're the same people sort of promoting this bill and promoting a lot of the thing, like changes that'll be put in place because of this legislation. So yeah, I think a big issue with this, the bill doesn't discriminate between content that's causing harm and that's preventing it. It's just sort of a catch-all. The people, again, that are going to be determining what is or is not appropriate for kids are politicians, are a lot of these same people that are trying to, again, eliminate trans people from public life in their own words. So it's scary. I'm really like worried about where this is going. And on top of that, just talking about the internet and some of the, again, like positives that I see about the internet and social media, because I do feel like I got to defend that a little bit. A lot of queer and trans kids don't live in accepting households, or they just don't know other queer people. Again, I've talked about this before. I had a couple friends growing up that were like also coming out around the same time, but like I didn't really know any other queer people. I didn't know any queer adults. And like, if you're a person of color, if you're a person who belongs to a marginalized religious group or ethnic group, you can kind of be in a similar position where maybe you're the only person at your school who has that identity and you can't really relate to other, like you just don't have a community to talk about those experiences with. That can be really detrimental to your mental health. And so one thing I was thinking about, so there was this campaign when I was growing up that was called It Gets Better. And I'll be real, it was really corny. Like, I thought it was really dumb. That being said, I think it was well-intentioned. I think, like, looking back, I'm really glad it was, like, a thing. I'm glad, and again, especially given the situation now, I'm like, oh, I did not realize that that was, like, really good. I do think I missed the mark a little bit. Anyways, I think the point of what that whole campaign is, that campaign was supposed to be, and I think something that I think is really important, it's supposed to be like showing kids this idea that like you can have a happy queer future. And I think for me, again, that whole campaign didn't really work for me. I was a really angsty kid. I think I was just like very like whatever. But the things that like helped me sort of imagine a happy queer future for myself where I would be able to be like my true self and be, again, yeah, just be happy, just be like not suffering all the time. Access to the internet was access to YouTubers and to Tumblr and to just like, and to fan fiction. Again, like I keep going back to that, but that was really the first time I read stories about queer people. And again, these are all things that are going to be attacked, just sort of like wiping the existence of queer people from the internet. All you're going to do with that is show kids that like you don't have a future. You don't have a future where you can be happy and accepted and be your true self. And that is terrifying. That is what leads to suicide. So anyways, yeah. Right-wing politicians want us dead. What else is new? Anyways, let's talk about the Democratic co-sponsor of this bill, Richard Blumenthal. Oh my God, this guy. Okay. So he has been a co-sponsor on a lot of similar bills, a lot of these bills that have been tracked by the Electronic Freedom Foundation and Fight for the Future. This has been, just looking at kind of his legislative history, he also like tried to pass some bills in like the late 90s, early 2000s about like regulating MySpace. And I don't know, this just seems to be his whole thing. He's very into like restricting what people can see online, apparently. He is also the co-sponsor of the Earn It Act, another bill that Fight for the Future is organizing against, which if you look at what Congress has online, they summarize the bill as, quote, "This bill revises the federal framework governing the prevention of online sexual exploitation of children," end quote. Which again, that sounds great. I don't think anybody can disagree that like that's, yeah, we shouldn't be having that happen, but that's not what the bill actually does. This is again from Fight for the Future's website, Bad Internet Bills. We'll also have that in the description. They have a lot of information about not just COSA, but like all of these bills, the Earn It Act and other bills that are happening right now. But yeah, so from their website, this bill, quote, "threatens to undermine online encryption by punishing companies that provide encryption services." again, I'm not a very techie person. I don't know exactly how end-to-end encryption works. But basically, it is what keeps online messaging private. It is what prevents, again, we don't really have good data privacy laws in this country, but it is like the one thing that prevents hackers from accessing your personal information. We all use it, even if you don't think you do, like you use it. And again, this is the same guy who's arguing that COSA will protect data privacy. And they've used some of the language from the Earn It Act. They put some of this into COSA. Both of these bills are going to destroy what little data privacy we have. Yeah, so also from Fight for the Future, in 2016, a bipartisan congressional commission concluded that, quote, encryption is inexorably tied to our national interest. Senator Ron Wyden has pointed out that, quote, you can't only build a backdoor for the good guys. Once you weaken encryption with a backdoor, you make it far easier for criminals and hackers and predators to get into your digital life. So like back in 2016, we had Congress people being like, we need encryption. This isn't like, we shouldn't end encryption. This is literally the one thing that is preventing hackers from getting into your stuff. This bill also allows for a heightened surveillance state. Also from the Fight for the Future website, quote, beyond the systemic surveillance issues we face, individual police officers routinely misuse their access to confidential databases to get information on neighbors, romantic partners, and business rivals. We know that giving law enforcement and intelligence officials access to our communication results in them taking advantage of that access in the ways that hurt us, often with absolutely no benefits to the public good. Why should we trust them with even greater access to our private conversations? Simply put, we shouldn't. So yeah, like, remember how like 10 years ago we had this whole like the Snowden leaks happen and we were like, oh my God, the government's been like recording all these phone calls and stuff and it hasn't even really done anything to like prevent terrorism. We had this whole conversation. I thought we universally like decided mass surveillance is a bad thing. But again, now we're apparently doing that. Yeah. So in an article about this bill, the Electronic Freedom Foundation states that, quote, in the name of fighting crime, the Earn It Act treats all internet users like we should be in a permanent criminal lineup under suspicion for child abuse. If enacted, Earn It will put massive legal pressure on internet companies, both large and small, to stop using true end-to-end encryption and instead scan all user messages, photos, and files. And like I said before, we all use end-to-end encryption. We use it for so many things. The Electronic Freedom Foundation points out that this bill could be used to target people who seek reproductive health care, since that's something that's been under attack. It also could be used to target trans folks. We're already seeing some state governments that are going out of their way to target and harass trans folks. Last year, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton attempted to use government resources to compile a list of trans adults who changed their legal gender marker on their ID. That is creepy. Like, he wanted a list of everybody that changed their gender marker on their ID. There's no way that ends well. Like, it's weird. And again, like, even if you're somebody, if you're in a position where like, I'm never going to have to deal with this, I am a cis white man, I have whatever, the most privilege ever. Why would you want less data privacy? Like, why? Again, and these are things like we use end-to-end encryption for healthcare. We use it for finances. Why would you want to make it easier for people to hack into your healthcare information, your health information, or your finances? Like, that doesn't seem good. A number of senators have spoken up against this bill, including Senator Cory Booker and John Ossoff. And 132 LGBTQ+ human rights organizations have signed onto a letter opposing this bill. Also, just a quick note, brought up this bill in relation to Senator Blumenthal, who is the Democratic co-sponsor of this bill. The Republican co-sponsor is Lindsey Graham. Ted Cruz is another co-sponsor. I don't know. I don't think those are people that have my best interest in mind. That's just my thoughts on that. Anyways, so again, COSA isn't the only bill that is attacking internet freedom or data privacy. Senator Blumenthal apparently thinks he's like an LGBTQ+ ally and has like spoken up in the past about LGBT issues. If you want to give me a call and explain to me why you think like you can call yourself an ally and lead the charge for both of these bills, like explain that to me because I'm confused. And yeah, again, because Congress is weird, there's also two nearly identical bills that
Blumenthal is sponsoring that are called, one is called Stop CSAM, and the other is called the Cooper Davis Act. And they both are essentially the same thing, where they're like, we're going to stop sexual abuse and child abuse by just monitoring everything on the internet and letting us look at anything on the internet. Go to badinternetbills.com if you want to learn more about this. They have some really great information. But yeah, this is scary. All of this is scary. Fun stuff.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Clearly, you've laid out why it's scary, but it's also scary that I hadn't heard of it before then.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the other part is like there's been very minimal coverage. Again, it is both of these are bipartisan bills that are going through. There has been, you can't just point to it to a right wing or a left wing issue. There's been a lot of propaganda, like kind of trying to portray this bill a certain way. Again, really big shout out to all of these activists on TikTok that are talking about this. I think they've done a really great job of like, especially educating younger folks. Sarah Phillips, who I mentioned at the top, she wrote a really awesome piece for Teen Vogue about this bill and kind of laying out, also talking about the AO3 crash and laying out sort of a lot of things that are going to be affected by this bill. But yeah, it is scary. Again, it's terrifying. This is going to have, if this passes, it's going to have a terrible impact on our data privacy, on internet freedom, on freedom of speech. Where is, again, this is one of those things where it's like, it's clearly a freedom of speech issue, and none of the supposed freedom of speech, whatever purists seem to be speaking out about this. So that's a whole other discussion, but yeah. Again, I think this is really important to talk about now. This is the second attempt. They tried this back in, I believe, 2016, where that quote was from. But they're trying to rush this through right now. I believe they're supposed to vote on it in September. I might be wrong about that. Anyways, that being said, though, this is an urgent issue. This is something that I think, especially, again, I think it is no coincidence that this is happening tangentially to all of these anti-trans, anti-queer legislation that's happening, especially those that are targeting trans kids. And again, I talked about the social contagion, conspiracy theory, lie, whatever the hell you want to call it. These are the same things that are fueling this legislation. And it's terrifying that this could be a national law. Oh yeah, and also just to add, Senator Blumenthal, who is the co-sponsor of this bill and of the
Earn It Act. He's also a co-sponsor of this Restrict Act, which is the bill that is, if you read the actual bill, what it says is it authorizes the Secretary of Commerce to review and prohibit certain transactions between persons in the United States and foreign adversaries and for other purposes. This is being promoted in response to TikTok, which there have been some, again, that's a whole other complicated conversation, but it's the myths that are going around is like TikTok's gonna be used to spy on the US from the Chinese government. And I don't know. Again, that's there's so much to unpack there. There's so much wrong with that claim. It also is very strange that we are like, you know, we have Facebook and we have all these other corporations that are tracking our data and have no problems like sharing it with the US government, probably have no problems like sharing it with foreign governments too. So it is weird that, and again, the reason they're going after TikTok is because TikTok has become the new platform for young people to organize on. Trump was really against TikTok, and like, that makes sense because remember he had that one rally where like there was supposed to be there was like a huge crowd that was supposed to be there and that was like really tiny because a bunch of people on TikTok like started basically explaining like, here's how to get tickets. And like I think it literally is just all these politicians that are like mad that people are organizing against them and are trying to restrict the platforms that people are using to organize. Yeah. And this is a conversation again, like, there definitely is a conversation to be had about internet safety, and there definitely is a conversation to be had about how kids are interacting with the internet and how the internet affects us. But this is something, this whole idea of like, we don't understand it, so we just have to like, we just have to block it, we just have to like get rid of it. This is something that happens every time there's a new piece of technology. And yeah, when I was a kid, it was video games. It's been used for certain types of music. It's been used for my favorite thing to point to in the 1950s. There was a whole congressional trial about comic books and about how comic books are like destroying the youth of America. Look up a like 1950s comic book panel. They're corny as hell. Like, it's so like there it's. Again, it's the same conversation over and over again. I think in 20 years, this conversation is going to look equally as ridiculous. I hope it does. But yeah, it's again, and also like my issue again, when we have these conversations about the internet, I think a big problem is very quickly, a lot of times it gets sort of split into either the internet's good or the internet's bad. Social media is good or social media is bad. And both are complicated. It is a very complicated situation. And regardless of whether it's good or bad, it's a thing that exists. Like, you can't put that back in the box. Like, it's out there. The internet exists. We interact with the internet every day of our lives. If you want to participate in everyday life, you need to know how the internet works. And I think, again, it is complicated. I do think there needs to be like some sort of conversation about this. But I think one of the positives of being a kid and growing up with the internet, growing up with internet access, is that you learn internet safety at a much younger age, and you learn kind of how to interact with the internet from a much younger age. And I think, again, like, you know, we joke about how like older people not being tech savvy and younger people kind of having more of a idea of how these platforms work. But like, the reason is because like, yeah, people my age, we all grew up with this. We all grew up learning this. We've learned how to be, you know, citizens on the internet, whatever that means. And just taking that away and just saying like, no, kids shouldn't be able to interact with this. Kids shouldn't understand the realities of how the internet works and how it affects us. Like, you're just putting off the problem. You're just putting it off till they're older. Yeah, it's weird. It's not going to end well. And we live in a really cool time. It's a lot of weird stuff's happening right now.
Yeah. The Pope's talking about AI, I tell you.
The Pope's talking about AI, apparently. It's the weird thing about this too is like, when I brought up that quote, like Gen Z activist group that's behind supposedly supporting COSA. One of their things they've been really like advocating, like regulating AI, which I think is a totally like, yeah, that's a whole different issue, first of all. And yes, we do need to be regulating AI. We do need to be having some conversations about AI. That's not the same thing as social media and just like the ability to find things on the internet. These are all, again, like I said before, ageism's bad, but I think it is a little like these are people that are in their 70s that are trying to explain the internet to us. They're trying to explain how the internet works. Like, this isn't, I don't know. There's so many. I just, yeah, that's
all. It's a series of tubes. That's what they told me. It's a series of pipes. That is a real quote. That is a real quote from a politician.
That, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's, yeah. And I mean, thank you for breaking this down. I feel like we're seeing all of these book bans. We're seeing all of this attempts at censorship. And a lot of times people don't equate what's going on online with, quote, real life. But it is. We do interact with it every day. I lost it for a little bit recently. And I was like, well, what do I do? How do I function? Like, it's a part of our everyday lives. And they're just using all of these fake, like we've talked before about how often they use sex trafficking and the safety of children and all of these things that sound really good, but they're just using it to distract you from the real thing. And like those issues, distracting from those issues. Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's really scary because the internet... We've also talked before about, yeah, they're perfectly happy for American companies to make money. But so many places that people frequent that you were discussing, where you might find like a community around your marginalized identity, are free. And that's important. But yeah, they would probably, that's like the first thing they're going to get rid of. Like the companies that can like get your data right now, nothing's going to happen to them. But like those kind of free spaces where people can find community that they maybe couldn't, that's gonna go first.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think also we're watching this happen while like Twitter's kind of falling apart, and I think that's been a great like that's been a great example of how like Twitter for a while, again, it wasn't perfect, there were a lot of issues with Twitter, but it was a place that a lot of activist movements like kind of gained popularity. That's where like the mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter movement and Me Too like really gained momentum. It was like a networking platform for a lot of people. Again, I'm a journalist. I used Twitter a lot to connect with people and to connect with sources or just connect with other people with like similar identities. I have a lot of friends that I met through the internet just because we were both queer, we're both like trans, or we're both interested in the same like nerdy fandom stuff. Like it's been a really, I think the whole is the internet good or bad thing isn't a productive conversation, because again, it exists, but it's like, but there are a lot of benefits. And I think, again, going back to that report that the supporters of this bill keep pointing to about the mental health effects of social media, they're really ignoring the fact that this report also is like, no, like this can be really great for kids with marginalized identities. There are a lot of positives to this. Mm-hmm. It's much more complicated. And if we want to talk about mental health too, like we have like the healthcare situation in this country is a mess. We don't want to, like, why aren't we talking about that? You know what would be a great like right. thing to help out mental health in this country would be to like strengthening our actual like healthcare system and the ability of people to access healthcare, because so many people like don't have health insurance, or and that in itself causes more, you know, harm to your mental health. Financial insecurity causes harm to your mental health. The fact that we live in a planet that is burning, definitely. That's always a big thing. I don't know. Again, like as aliens, apparently, I think that's fun. I do think it was a little funny. But yeah, it's like people always started talking about how like Gen Z has terrible mental health. Yeah. We're on a planet that's dying. Like it makes sense. I don't know. It's this whole thing is so. Yeah. I've said my piece. It's messed up.
It is. Well, thank you, Joey, for coming on and bringing this to us and breaking it down, for providing sources, because there are, if you look this up, there are some things you can do, like contacting your senators, all that kind of stuff, if you want to do something about this very scary thing that's happening. But yes, Joey, where can the people find you online if they want to?
For now, yeah. While we still have the internet. You can find me at Pat, Patt, not Not, Pratt, Pratt, That is my Twitter and my Instagram. If you're interested in this topic and you want to learn more about the internet and all the various issues with the internet and technology, should check out There Are No Girls on the Internet, which with Bridget Todd. I work on that show as well as a couple other. I have a new one coming out I'll probably be talking about next time I'm on here, but as of right now, I don't have any updates. But find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not on Twitter very much anymore because, like, who is? But, you know, I'm holding on till it crashes.
Till death. <That's> right.
Yes.
Well, yeah, well, more excuse for you to come back and you could talk about your upcoming show.
Yeah, anytime. Love being on the show. So fun.
We love having you. So that's glad. Well, listeners, if you would like to find us on the internet, you can email us at stephanieandmomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok @StuffIneverToldYou. We have a Tee Public store with merchandise. We have a book you can pre-order. It is at stephyoushouldreadbooks.com. We have an audiobook and a physical form of the book. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and Joey, who is here.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Steph Under Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.